Hello, everyone. Welcome to Inside Monster Jam, powered by Lucas Oil, the official Monster Jam podcast. I'm Scott Jordan, and my guest this week recently retired after 9 years as a rider in Monster Energy Supercross to come and join us on the Monster Jam broadcast team. And we go to Lompoc, California on the Great Clips hotline to welcome in the 7 Deuce Deuce, Adam Enticknapp. Adam, welcome to Inside Monster Jam, buddy. Good to have you on.
What's up, Scott, dude? It's so good to be here. So pumped when I got the call to come on the show with you.
Well, you and I usually have a weekly call, and I just figured it was my turn to ask you to do, help me out to come on the show, man. So I appreciate you being here. It's good to, I know there's been some subtle announcements on your social media about what you're doing next, and I think you broke it on the Pulp MX show. Racer X as well covered it about you coming over to Monster Jam. So we're going to get into that here in a little bit. But first, let's talk about the origins of the 7 Deuce Deuce and go back to when you first started riding. And when did you know that a motorcycle was made for you?
I think I knew it at a very young age. The first time I rode a dirt bike, I absolutely loved it. And I think what really hooked me in was going to Supercross and watching Jeremy McGrath. And it's weird because there's those certain memories that you kind of like that just stick with you. And one of the memories that I always have, and it's just so weird, is I was sitting in the Coliseum. And we were watching Jeremy McGrath race, and he was my favorite rider, and he'd won that night. And I looked up at my dad, and I said, "Dad, when I grow up, I wanna be a professional Supercross racer, just like Jeremy McGrath." And it was like I was like 5 years old, you know what I mean? And for some reason, I still remember that memory of being in the Coliseum and telling my dad that all I wanted to do was be a professional Supercross racer, and like. Ever since that day, I got so lucky as a kid. The only thing I wanted to do was that, and I focused on that solely and never really veered off. I never really did any other sports or did anything else. I just wanted to do that. And I did it every single day until I was successful. I never gave up, no matter how many people told me, you're not going to make it, or how many times I got hurt or whatever it was. I just kept my head down and did it.
Yeah, Jeremy McGrath was my favorite rider too. It was a big reason why I, followed Supercross so much, was because of riders like him. He was literally the first one I was exposed to. When you saw him and realized this is something you wanted to do, this was your dream. We all have dreams as kids. Mine was to be a Hulk Hogan or Batman, and I went 0-2 on those. So, but you had this dream to be a Supercross rider, and you accomplished that. You made that happen. So what were the steps for you to take to get there? And we'll talk about life as a privateer here in a little bit, but talk first about as an amateur, how did you get to where you ended up getting an opportunity?
I think one of the biggest things was just having a family that supported me in what I wanted to do. That was one of the big steps. And then going to all these amateur nationals, I raced Lake Whitney, Oak Hill, and did a lot of those. And I actually was very unsuccessful at first. I was terrible at it. I was getting 25th, 30th place. And I was really, really nervous, because where I come from is a really small town, and there's not very many people that, race dirt bikes. Lompoc, California, you're not really like, oh, this is where all the motocross people come from. It's down south in LA, and Florida is so popular for Supercross racing and motocross racing. There's so many kids doing it. And where I was from, there wasn't very many people doing it. So I kind of didn't have somebody to gauge off of or anything like that. So we'd just go to the nationals and kind of wing it. My dad would just be like, "Hey, dude, this is the biggest race there is. Let's go do it." We went out there, we did it. And the first year was very unsuccessful. And then the next year I went out and I trained my butt off and kind of found that bar. And I won the novice class. I think I got podiums at Lake Whitney. And then I went first in both 450 classes. So I swept both 450 classes at Oak Hill, and then top five at a place called Ponca City, Oklahoma. And those were like the big races of the year. And I think that was one of the biggest turning points for me. Like, even if it was novice class, which is like the lower ranking class, there's novice, intermediate, and pro. At that point, there was 3 gates of 40 novice riders, and I won that class. And I think my dad and I both kind of knew, like, hey, like, even if it is novice, for us to go out here to Texas and win these races was unbelievable.
All right, well, we are going to start diving into the origins of the Seven Deuce Deuce, as well as your life as a privateer in Monster Energy Supercross. So all of that is coming up next. Make sure you stick around here. We have Adam Entignap on, and we have so much more on the way, so stick around. This is Inside Monster Jam, powered by Lucas Oil. We'll see you in a bit. Welcome back to Inside Monster Jam, powered by Lucas Oil. I am joined right now on the Great Clips Hotline by former Supercross rider Adam Entignap, now turned Monster Jam color analyst. So Adam, let's talk about, and we talked about the origins of you riding, let's talk about life as a privateer in Monster Energy Supercross. You know, you and I have talked at great length about what life is like for an independent driver in Monster Jam, but I know it's a similar but much different world in Supercross. And you had a team. You were with the HEP Twisted T Suzuki team, which, you know, everybody loves. Roxen's on there now, so it's a very well-established team. But still talk about, you know, what you had to do week after week as a privateer, and maybe the difference between what life was like with that team as opposed to a factory team such as Red Bull KTM.
Yeah, you know, when I first started Supercross, I was never one of the stars. You know, I wasn't looked at as like the next big up and coming guy. And because of that, you know, I was kind of making night shows and not making night shows. And people that aren't familiar with that is like making top 40 and actually getting to go to the night program. Like, there's guys who don't even get to go to the night program, so you won't even see them out on the track on TV or anything. And there was weekends when I first started, I didn't even make the night program. And what I had to do then is my dad was kind of like, hey, you know, if you want to do this, you got to figure out how to do it kind of on your own. And it was getting to the point where I was 20 years old and I needed to figure it out. So the only way I could do it was to travel the country with Ted Parks. He's a guy that kind of takes privateers around. And I was lucky enough to get to know him and be able to stay in his motorhome. And what we did is I took my bike and I went in this motorhome. And I traveled literally from race to race. And we'd pull over on the side of the highway on a mile marker, and I'd run like 5 miles down the mile markers. And then he'd meet me at the mile marker number 5, and I'd get back in the motorhome. And that was like, sometimes that was my training for the day and wherever we could stop. You know, Supercross is so difficult. And sometimes I wouldn't even get to ride on a Supercross track during the week. You know, I'd go ride like a homie's field that, you know, we found on Instagram. So like whatever it took. And as I got better and better and better, you know, I got more parts, more bikes, more support. And it was just a snowball effect. And then, you know, it's just crazy how different it was at the end. You know, when I got to ride for HEP Twisted T Suzuki, I didn't look up a flight. I didn't book a hotel. I didn't pay an entry fee, you know, and I know every single thing about Supercross and what it took to do everything. And at the end, you know, at the end, I didn't even have to get my food for the day. You know, I was having food delivered to me, and all I did was show up to the track and ride my dirt bike. And that was it. And I had 3 sets of gear laid out, printed with my name on it in my locker. And I did practically nothing but race a dirt bike, where when I first started, shoot, if I had to build a motor that weekend before the race, I had to build a motor. If I had to put whatever on my bike, get my gear, I had to go to the laundromat during the week and wash the laundry. So I did whatever it took. So I know from the very, very bottom all the way to the very top on racing Supercross. So I'm definitely lucky.
What are your thoughts on Roxen joining that team?
Dude, I think it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable for my buddy Dustin Pipes, which is the team owner, like where we started with that team. I started, I think, 6 years ago with that team when we just had like a tiny little semi that wasn't even like a semi. It was kind of like a racer trailer with it wrapped, and we got some support from Suzuki, and that's how they started that team. And then I got on that team, and I feel like mutually we built that team together. Obviously Dustin Pipes and his father and a few others spent a lot of money, but I did everything I could social media wise, and that was about the time that I kind of started blowing up and social media, and just in Supercross as a racer that had a lot of fans. And I did everything that I could to get everybody over to HEP so we could get more sponsors and grow the team. And now all of a sudden, you know, at the end, we're full factory Suzuki. And now we just landed one of the star athletes in Supercross, maybe one of the fastest guys that's ever raced. And he just got a podium on the bike for the first time. HEP got its first podium this season in Supercross. They had one in outdoor with Max Anstey, but to see that, to see the success, to see the growth, it's truly unbelievable, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
It's amazing. When I started calling the Monster Cup in 2017, to see where HEP was then, they were still an established team, but to see them now on the same lines as your Rockstar Husky, it's really a testament to the work you guys did. All right, we are going to come back. We are going to talk about the 7 Deuce Deuce. We're going to go back and revisit the crash that changed the trajectory of Adam's career. All that and more next on Inside Monster Jam, powered by Lucas Oil. Welcome back to Inside Monster Jam, powered by Lucas Oil. I'm joined again on the Great Clips Hotline by Adam Entignav. Adam, numbers are a huge deal in Supercross, but you took your number to another level. It wasn't just 722, it became 7 Deuce Deuce. You developed this rapping persona as well. So talk quickly about the origins of that and how you evolved it into this incredibly likable character.
You know, it's funny because I was actually going to pick the number 522. So when you sign up for Supercross, my birthday is May 22nd. So I was originally going to pick 522, and that's what I wrote down. You get three choices for your rookie number for Supercross. And I wrote 522, and my dad's like, what's going to be your second option? I'm like, you know, James Stewart is like one of my favorite guys to watch. And I always wanted to be like James because he was so fast and he always went big. So I was like, you know what? I'll just put 722. And sure enough, like a couple of weeks later, I got back in the mail and they're like, congratulations, you've been selected as number 722. And I was like, what? No way. I didn't get 522. I wanted my birthday so bad. You know what I mean? And I was initially bummed about it. And then I went on Pulp MX and like, I don't know if I said it or they said it or whatever. They were like, 7 Deuce Deuce, what up? And it just stuck like glue. And I just ran with it. That was my character. That's who I was on the outside. That's who, you know, I was at Supercross. And it was just this dude that loved to have fun. And it really ended up being who I always wanted to be and who I am deep down inside. And I just had fun doing Supercross. And then, like I said, I made a couple rap songs, and they just hit so big. And it just seemed like 7 Deuce Deuce, the artist name, was even better than the rider name. And it's something that's so unique. And I think when people see it, they just right off the bat initiate it with me and being 7 Deuce Deuce. So it's crazy how the world works. And I can't believe it fell just perfectly in line like that.
Well, that's three iconic numbers. You got James Stewart, you got Chad Reed, and then you got the 7 Deuce Deuce, man. So it's three there.
There you go.
So let's go back to Orlando in 2021, the crash that, you know, eventually would lead to the end of your career. What do you remember about that night? You know, what were your injuries? How do you feel today? And how did that transition you to a new career?
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, I have a lot of faith. I have faith in God, and I think that that he has a plan. And I think that was just one of those days that was part of the plan. Unfortunately, in practice, I was on a hot lap, and this was 2021. I was on fire. You know, I was coming from, if I was 17th to 20th in the LCQ, I knew as long as I didn't go down, I could make it. And I have proof with that. If you go back to 2021, I came from the back multiple times and made it, and I was just on fire. That was the fastest I'd ever been. And in practice in Orlando that day, I gave this guy ahead of me quite a bit of space, and he was a faster rider, and I thought that was enough. And I went to go do a hot lap, and I was catching him. And I was quadding over the top of this tabletop, and he was jumping onto the tabletop, and he came up short and just stopped. And he didn't keep going. Like, he gave up on that lap because he was doing a hot lap as well. And when he stopped, I was already committed to the quad, and I was in the air, and it was either, okay, I'm going to land on this guy and just completely destroy him. And, you know, it might be okay. It might not, or I can try to like lean as much as I can left and try to avoid this dude. And when I went to lean, I leaned like obviously enough to miss him. But when I came down the landing, it just had like a slight edge to it. And I pushed the front and it just completely turned. And then when it turned like that, it spit me forward and I slammed the next jump. And then I hit that jump so hard that it like bounced me up in the air and I landed on the next jump. And I remember it like yesterday. It was the hardest hit I'd ever taken. When I hit that thing, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm really, really hurt. And the wind was knocked out of me probably for the longest time that I've ever had. I got up and I was like, oh my gosh, I think I'm not that bad. And I had just broken my collarbone. So I kind of got up, they helped me up. I got on the back of the thing, went to the hospital. They bolted my collarbone up. I think you can, there's like a little scar right here going up my collarbone. And that was it. And I was back riding in 3 weeks. But as soon as I got on the bike for the first time, I knew something was wrong. My heart rate was like super, super elevated and I couldn't figure out why. And I've had kind of, injury. I've had a lot of injuries before where I get back on the bike and you're out of shape, but this was like different. And, unfortunately your vagal nerve runs kind of like right underneath your collarbone on this side. And there were some nerve damage that was done and, you can't really do anything about that. And your body runs off that, your body runs off that nervous system, whether you like it or not. So I had some like kind of internal problems and then definitely had some different stuff going on that we couldn't figure out. And we did everything that we could to get it fixed, but I just haven't been the same at an elevated rate. Like every day, doing stuff is absolutely fine. But whenever I push my body to the limit, like working out or riding, like I need to for the sport of supercross, I just can't quite do it like I used to. So that's kind of what made the decision to retire.
And then you retire and you call Dave Prater, the vice president of Supercross, about some announcing opportunities. You go to Monster Jam University, you train in a truck under Tom Mentz, and then you get an opportunity to join our broadcast team here. So how has that transition been for you to go from Supercross to now announcing Monster Jam?
I'm telling you what, Scott, I got all smile on my faces because like what is so cool is I didn't know if I would get that rush back like I did from Supercross. And as soon as I got to drive at Tom Mentz's house in that Monster Jam truck, I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. And it was like, you know, a Monster Jam truck is just unbelievable. I wish everybody that was a fan could get an opportunity to drive one. It's like, it is so cool. It's such a high performance vehicle. And it just reminded me so much of Supercross. And then getting an opportunity to be in the booth and call it. This is kind of always what I wanted to do, even when I was a kid. I mean, as you can see on this podcast, I'm a chatty Cathy. And if I can call motorsports, especially in the booth, I was going to go all in. And I got the call from Dave Prater. And I talked to a bunch of people over here at Monster Jam, and it's one of those things, again, just like Seven Deuce Deuce, where everything kind of just fell right into place. And so grateful for the opportunity and happy to be here.
No, you're doing a great job. I've been excited to, you know, spend this process with you, getting to know you, and you know, helping you through this and get you ready. But you've been amazing. The hard work this dude has put in to learn the sport and the ins and outs is unreal. And I'm excited for our fans to see that come to fruition. You and Leslie make a great team, and you'll be calling Stadium Championship Series Blue all season long. Barry and I will be calling Stadium Championship Series Red. Speaking of Leslie, I personally have a question for you. I'm going to save it for the next segment. We did take some fan questions coming up, so I'm going to get to those, and I'm going to put Adam on the spot. We're going to find out who's more fun in the booth, Scott Jordan or Leslie Mears. You do not want to miss that answer, and I hope it's the one I'm hoping for. All that next on Inside Monster Jam, powered by Lucas Oil. Welcome back to Inside Monster Jam, powered by Lucas Oil. I'm Scott Shorten, joined on the Great Clips Hotline by Adam Entick-Knapp, the 7 Deuce Deuce. We're going to rock through some questions here for you. Jack Mitchell on Instagram wants to know, what are the similarities between a Supercross bike and a Monster Jam truck? Because on paper, they could not seem more different.
I mean, one of the biggest things is the power delivery. Obviously, a Monster Jam truck has a lot more power, but when you hit the gas or hit the throttle, whatever you want to call it, feels very similar on takeoff. And that's what allows you to do such big jumps like they do in Monster Jam and in Supercross. And then other things are just traction and suspension and how the truck, you know, physically works on the dirt.
All right, Bradley Shaw on Facebook is asking if we're going to get any rap songs about Monster Jam. Obviously, that has to happen at some point.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I'm in the works on an album right now. So, I mean, I always love doing fun stuff on the side. So it just depends if something sparks my interest, but I'd love to.
All right. This question comes from me. I'm curious what your answer is. This is not the main event question, but real quick, you know, I know a lot of Supercross riders are nice dudes. There's some that have different reputations. Who do you think is the most unapproachable rider in Supercross? Like somebody you just wouldn't want to come up to at any point in time and try to get out of their way?
I mean, probably Justin Barcia. It's either Justin Barcia or Jason Anderson right now. I mean, Jason Anderson's been on a tear with talking smack to every single guy on the Supercross circuit right now. So it's got to be either Justin Barcia or Jason Anderson. When you get them outside, well, they're fine, but not in it.
Those two are going at each other right now, so it's pretty funny to watch that. All right, final question, main event question. You've worked with both of us, and I hope Mears is watching right now. Who is more fun to work with in the booth, Leslie Mears or me? And go.
I mean,
quick.
If Leslie's watching, it's Leslie.
That's a crap
I mean,
answer.
I love working with both of you, but I think Leslie would kill me if I didn't say Leslie. So Leslie Mears is definitely better.
Yeah, we'll see about that. All right, man, it's been awesome. You can hear Adam and Leslie calling Stadium Championship Series Blue all season long on Monster Jam Television. Adam, thanks so much for spending your morning with me, man, and I look forward to seeing you soon.
I love talking with you, Scott. Enjoyed this show. Can't wait.
That is all the time we have. Make sure you stay involved on social media and join me right here next time on Inside Monster Jam, powered by Lucas Oil.